Hello and welcome along. It's Andy, your host on this here podcast.
So here we go. It's episode 12 of the Wedding Professionals podcast, and I'm in the sleepy hamlet of Dudley in the West Midlands, which seems to be serviced by 18 motorways and 400 dual carriageways. And then when you get here, it's horrible. No, it's a really nice place, and we're in a very anonymous unit in the heart of Dudley. And my guest today is the one and only Amrit Nat from Mist FX. Welcome, Amrit.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm glad we could finally get to it and get it done.
I know it's taken a 2-hour drive to get here, but it's going to be worth it, I'm sure. And also, listeners, if you hear the sounds of chewing through this, it's because he's very kindly provided chips and pizza and all good hospitality. Take note, kudos, I only got a bottle of water there. So, Amrit, Mist FX. So you supply all the sparkly, smoky effects and also the confetti, of which my flight cases are now full of after last weekend's wedding with Kickley and for Ammon and Kieran. So now, the thing is, though, I've known you probably for 8, 9, 10 years, perhaps, when it was the new Bingley Hall, mm-hmm, and you were there with JP Tex. So,
yeah, that's right.
So talk to me about that time.
So, well, from the time I knew you, I was sort of just concentrating on AV, just working for AV companies, one of them being JP Tex with Paul. But obviously I started off before that when I was about 10 years old. So we're talking 14 years ago.
Really?
Yeah. So my family used to provide sort of visual screens for weddings. So your plasmas, your projectors, your video curtains, your video walls, things like that.
Okay.
So that's where it started. So when I was about 8, 9 years old, I just used to go out on the road with my dad. Just spend time with him. So I just used to be there, just handing him a cable or passing him things. And I slowly started to sort of get more into it. And when I was about 10 years old, I started picking up how it all works. This is what this does. This is how this works. This is how we put things up. And probably by about the age of sort of 12, 13, I was sort of going out on my own, jumping in the vans with DJs with the kit in the back, going out there and setting up the screens for them and things like that. So that's where I sort of originally started.
So talk to me about your dad's business then, because I wasn't aware of any of that either.
Yeah, so that was like years ago now. They sort of finished it now. They sort of, they just got tired with it all. But yeah, so we used to, so obviously, but now you see like a lot of the DJs doing it. But before, the DJs would just turn up with their sound and their lights, and then we'd turn up with the sort of plasmas and the projectors. And obviously that evolved to them, and video curtains came out and video cloths. And then from that, it then went to the LED video walls, which every single wedding has nowadays. So yeah, started off with that. So that's how I started off with it, just concentrating on that sort of stuff and just going out and doing that.
Brilliant. So when I met you at Bingley Hall then, you were just subbing for Paul or...?
Yeah, so we started off subbing to
Big
Paul.
Big shout out to Paul, by the way, hi, if you're listening, which he won't be, but if he is, hi, Paul.
So yeah, we started subbing to Paul and that's how I met him. And then that's when I sort of started to get interested in the AV side of things, the lighting and the audio. And not just video. Suddenly, I started working for him for some time. Then I sort of started getting into the sort of AV side of things. And then I sort of started freelancing for sort of other road shows as well, but mainly sort of just with Paul, because he was quite busy at the time. So, yeah, so that's what I was doing at the time, and I met you as the AV.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Now, we're currently sat in a unit in Dudley, and it's obvious there are cables hanging up, there's pipes hanging up, there's flight cases, millions of flight, well, not millions, that's an exaggeration.
Quite a few.
But there's quite a few flight cases and bits and pieces, so you're obviously really well established now. I mean, yeah. I think everybody in the business knows you anyway. But how did you get to be this size? Because this is super impressive in here.
Yeah, so I was like, even to this day, I sort of pinch myself and think, wow, like it's, I never really realised how much kit we actually have until I sort of like walk in here and I'm like, wow, like we've got a lot going out on this weekend, but yet there's still quite a lot of kit still left. So back in 2015, someone showed me a video of the CO2 guns. And I saw it and I was like, hey, they would probably work quite well on weddings, like, because a wedding is a party and it might work. So there was a guy I knew on Facebook who's also called Andy, who did like sort of special effects and lasers. And I messaged him and I was like, hey, like, I'm interested in buying these CO2 guns. First, like, as soon as I saw this video, I did my research on them, saw what they were about, how they work, and things like that, and all the sort of implications behind it, and all the safety. And then I messaged him, I was like, oh, hey, I've seen these CO2 guns. Is this something you can source for me? And he was like, yeah, I can get it for you. And that's how it started, really. And now sort of Andy's become like a really, really good friend of mine and somebody who I look up to quite a lot. And he's quite big within the SFX industry. And even to this day, he still helps me out whenever I phone him. You know, he always offers me advice and things like that. And then it started picking up for us with just these two pairs of CO2 guns. You know, me and Dad would jump in the car, we'd have like two CO2 bottles in the back, and we'd drive through a gig and set them up and stuff like that. And then they sort of started getting busier and busier. And then I ended up investing in some, like, sort of a better brand version because it was going so well. And I was like, oh, like, these are sort of like a cheaper version. So I was like, you know, I was like, let's get like some better ones now. So I ended up buying some better versions of them. And then at Bingley Hall, we used to hire a low fog machine quite a bit in, but he'd sort of drop the machine off and we'd have to set it up and stuff like that. And I was like, this isn't too bad. And I was like, there's nobody in the Asian wedding industry or the wedding industry that specializes in just this service. There's a few DJs at the time that had a dress machine and they would offer it with their services, but not every DJ had that. And I was like, hey, like, there's a gap here in the market. And I thought, well, let's look into it. So I looked at the price of this machine and like it was quite a lot. And I was like, for like, and at the time I was 17 now, I think. Yeah, I was about 17 at the time. And I was like, it's quite a lot of money, this is.
Okay, how much money exactly?
I think at the time it was roughly around about the £4,000 mark.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, it's quite a lot. And I saved up my money and I thought, let's just see what happens. Like, you'll only know until you actually do it what's going to happen. So I ended up buying it and it turned up. And the first thing I did when it turned up, I remember by this time I was driving. I literally got the box, turned up at home, and I went to see if it would fit in my car. Because I was like, if this doesn't fit in my car, I was like, there's no point in me having it because I can't do anything with it then.
Yeah.
So I had a Ford Fiesta, put the seats down, and I got it all in. And I was like, perfect, like, I can do this now in my car. So I drive around to gigs in my car. My first gig was in Ruislip in London. That was my first ever gig, I remember that.
That's a bit of a slog from here, isn't it?
Yeah, so that was my first ever gig with this low fog machine. And then like things started picking up more and more the more we advertised it. And because sort of people had known me anyway in the industry for the last, you know, sort of 6 odd years, I sort of said to them, look, I do dry ice now, let me know. And then it just sort of got busier and busier. And we were in Miller Carter one day, me and the family, and my brother was like, look, this is actually picking up now. You need to think of a name of it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, where the name came from.
Yeah, so we were sitting in Miller Carter and he was like, you need to think of a name of it. So we were all sort of chucking names in. And then he just said Mr. Fex. And I was like, he was like, when the low fog comes out, it's, you know, it looks like mist, and the CO2 guns looks like mist as well. And I was like, yeah, all right, fucking that works. Let's just do it. And then that's how Mr. Fex was born, was in 2015 it was, the name came out. Yeah, so 2015 the name
very
came
good.
Out.
Very good. And here we are, what, 8 years later, and you're the man in the FX business. And of course, it's not just the weddings either, because you're doing, you know, I see on your Facebook and stuff, you're doing full-blown concerts with musicians and stuff.
Yeah, so I think it was just before COVID it sort of started off for us, where we'd started doing, I did that sort of my first big gig was at Brixton Academy. Someone said to me, look, hey, someone's dropped out, can you do it? And I was like, I don't know. And then someone said to me, look, the only way you're going to get bigger is if you jump in at the deep end. And I was like, forget it, let's just do it, let's see what happens. And touch wood, luckily, it went well in the end, and everybody was like really surprised, and the client was happy, things like that. And I was like, you know what? I was like, I can actually do this.
The thing is with places like Brixton Academy, you know, there are ways in theatres that perhaps wedding DJs don't actually know about, that things have to be done in a certain way and safety procedures and protocols have to be adhered to. So where did you learn all that sort of side of it?
That was, it was mainly, I sort of picked that up quite a lot from two of my really good friends. One was Andy, who helped me start off. I freelanced for him a fair bit, and I sort of picked up things like that. And the other one was a good friend of mine called George. Same again, I freelanced for him, and he sort of showed me the way. He was like, look, this is how... Because we knew how to do things safely, but it was applying it in a different purpose. Like, for weddings, we do it in a safe manner, but yeah. In the bigger venues, they like things done certain ways.
Yeah.
And it was adapting to that. So we knew how to do things safely, but it was adapting it to this large-scale event.
Okay. And do you have to, for a theatre, for instance, like Brixton Academy, do you have to submit a paperwork and show that you're safe? Or
yeah, so what happens is before every gig, it's usually, they usually like it 2 weeks beforehand. We sort of submit them a Dropbox link where they have like a full, there's like three folders. There's one which basically says who we are and what we're doing and just a document about the actual show itself. The next folder is full of the risk assessment. So you'll have one for your low fog, your sparklers, your flame, your pyro, your confetti. And obviously they've got to then review it. And if they're happy with it, they'll say, yep, come in, not an issue. If they're not happy with it, they can just turn around and say no, or can this be changed? And the next folder is basically called a material safety data sheet.
Okay.
Which just basically says what the material is that we're using and how it can be safe and what the hazards are of that material and if it needs extinguishing, things like that, basically. That's what they get.
Okay, but you don't have anything that can catch fire. I mean, CO2 can't catch fire, can it?
Yeah, can it? Yeah, so CO2 can't catch fire.
Set a flame to it. they'd be interesting guns, wouldn't they?
No, CO2 can't catch fire. CO2 is actually an extinguisher. But what can catch fire is like the flames that we use, because that uses gas. So if there's a gas leak and you don't detect it, there is a massive risk of that catching fire. Pyro that we use, that can also catch fire. Or if the pyro wasn't to fire in the way it's attended to, it can sort of fire out sideways or like sort of explode, so to say. And if somebody's too close to it when you fired it, that can be quite catastrophic. That's why we have sort of safety distances.
Okay.
Same with sparklers. They can catch fire because obviously it's so hot. And if you use, like some people use either cheaper machines which won't stop heating up and they'll heat up and then the powder will get too hot and the whole unit will catch fire. And there has been instances like that I've heard. Or there's been quite a few where DJs have put them too close to the plastic decal that we have nowadays.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, not all decal companies use flame retardant draping or decal.
Okay.
So I've had a few phone calls where people have been like, oh, it's caught fire and I thought they were cold. And I'm like, they're not actually cold. If you have a look at a heat map, you'll see that the first few inches are burning hot because the powder gets heated up to, you know, roughly 450 degrees. So they're not exactly cold.
No.
So there are things that can catch fire, and that's why a lot of venues are picky with the paperwork, especially with SFX, because it is just so dangerous, even if it's like a CO2 jet, because if someone's too close to it and it gets fired, it can, you know, cause a serious cold burn to someone.
And those venues are quite right, I suppose, to study the paperwork and make sure everything's safe and proper. That must take up a huge amount of your time, just doing paperwork, crossing T's, dotting I's and making sure everything's right.
Yeah, massively. Because a lot of the time with the SFX as well, it's always last minute. So it's like people be like, oh, we've got this much budget left. Let's do, you know, we can afford the SFX now.
Oh,
so
okay.
Like we've had it before where it's been like 4 days before an event or 5 days before an event. And we're already on gigs already. And they're like, we need the paperwork. And they want it by 2 p.m. And you're like, oh, I'm here setting up. Like,
right.
So there has been quite a few instances where we've had to sort of just push and quickly get the paper done. And it's not something that you can do quickly. It's,
no.
You know, we have got templates, but everything, but it's not the exact same template. It's sort of, things change for every single event, placement of kit.
Well, I was going to say, every venue's like different, every setup's different.
Exactly. So it's not like a template that we can go copy paste, that's it, done, and you're done in 10 minutes. Usually for like a standard show where you've got a bit of confetti, a bit of flames, a bit of CO2, it could take about an hour just to sort of do that pack.
Oh, right.
At least,
okay. So it's about time you took on a secretary then to do this. So
yeah,
Yeah, look on LinkedIn, folks, for the for the job coming up that Amrit's going to post. Right, so on the subject of confetti, because you mentioned it there, this last weekend, how many kilos of confetti did you spray all over us?
14 kilos.
14 kilos.
Yeah, so there was 14 kilos of paper, rectangular, 55 by 17 mil confetti.
Now it makes me laugh that you know how many millimetres.
Yeah, so this will make you laugh, actually. So in 1 kilo of the paper rectangles, there's 100,000 pieces of those little rectangles.
Wow.
So you do like...
And it felt like it as well.
Yeah. So it's like 100,000 times by 14 is whatever that is.
So, yeah, quite a lot. So anybody that sees the video from Ammon's wedding, you'll know what that was all about. And we had 2 blasts of that.
Yeah, yes, there was 2 cues of that. The first cue was like 3 kilos per side, so 6 kilos coming out.
Okay.
And then the second lot was 4 kilos a side, so 8 kilos coming out.
The one downside of confetti, I have to say, is kids at weddings, they would then want to throw themselves on the dance floor, pick it up and scoop it up and then throw it in the air.
Yeah, and we saw a lot of that.
Generally, I was tripping over children for the next 2 hours while trying to operate the crane. What's the next big thing that you think is coming FX-wise?
It's really, really hard to say because in weddings, there's only so much you can do.
Okay.
Because it's venues aren't big. Venues aren't arenas. Like, this wedding venues aren't arenas whereby you can do literally anything you want. Like,
flames.
You couldn't do a flame at a wedding.
Okay.
You could, or it'd have to be quite small and it'd have to be in such a controlled area where the guests are all seated and there's enough space and things like that. But it's very rare to get that. I reckon a lot of people would like this confetti.
Mm.
So, like, people are so used to that one twisty cannon that you get during a gig. You know, the DJ comes along, pops it off. People have been so used to that. And now people have just seen this much confetti come out. I feel like quite a few people are going to be asking for this. Like, we've already had, like, sort of 5-6 people from that video ask, oh, can we have this ad?
Well, it just, I mean, for the group photo that we did at the beginning of second half, that just made it look epic.
Yeah.
You know, for still photography, I'm sure, as well as the video. And it really did enhance that moment, you know, in a major way. And I'm sure Jazzy B felt the same way. It was just like, well, look at me, I'm great. Look at all this confetti. It's fantastic.
Yeah, so I think that will probably be the next, not big thing, but I think that will be the next thing. The other thing is sort of where the pyros come down from the top.
Yeah.
That's what will be the next thing to do, which we've done quite a few times, but again, it's just the select venues where you can do it.
Yeah.
So
you need the height, I'm guessing, and
you need the rigging as well.
Yeah.
The rigging as well. So it's very difficult on what the next thing is for weddings. Maybe something bespoke. So I speak to someone in the weekend and we were sort of talking about where you sort of make like a head table set and you have sort of the low fog coming out of that onto the dance floor. So it sort of comes out from the stage.
Oh, right. Okay.
Over the stage, comes down and onto the dance floor.
Yeah.
That's sort of, those are sort of things I want to do, but it's just sort of finding the clients that want to do it and things like that.
Those, getting back to the confetti again, what sort of money, if I wanted to go and buy a confetti cannon and you had 2 there the other night, what sort of money do they run at?
So I think the trade price on them, well, no, I think they retail each unit at about $3,000 a unit.
Wow.
So there's 2 there, it's about $6,000 at a retail price.
So you've got a fair amount of money tied up in equipment.
Yeah.
And as I was arriving today, there was a guy dropping off another low fog machine, and you were sort of saying, oh yeah, it's been out on dry hire, and I didn't even know you did that. So you're supplying other production houses and things as well?
Yeah, so like not every company, like ourselves, we don't stock every single item SFX was on the market, and not many companies do that. So a lot of people do have to dry hire things in. So we have quite a few clients where they'll be like, hey, we need, you know, some sparklers for this weekend or whatever for this week. And like those guys, they sort of email me, say, hey, we need, you know, the MDG unit for these dates and this many weeks. And it's wicked because they literally just come, pick it up, take it away and bring it back and that's it done. It's easy money, but it's also stressful because you don't know how that unit's going to come back.
Yeah, how it's been treated.
How it's been treated, yeah. That's the biggest risk with dry hire. It's wicked, easy money, but you don't know how it's going to be treated.
Has there been any horror stories with stuff coming back completely broken? Or
We've had it before where a hose has been threaded, which wasn't too much of a biggie. Apart from that, touch wood, I think we've been quite lucky. We had one the other day where a cable was stuck in the back of a unit. So I think touch wood, we've actually been all right with things like that.
Hmm.
But we only sort of dry hire to sort of people that we know and we can trust.
Okay.
Because then at the end of the day, we then have to take this kit back out to another event.
Yeah.
So it's...
possibly on the same day. So if it's coming back in the morning, it could be going out that...
yeah, so you've got to trust them and make sure that everything's...
yeah, sure. Hi, everyone. Sorry to break in on this conversation with Amrit, which I really enjoyed recording. It's fun. It's always nice to see him. And I think he's got interesting stories to tell. So anyway, I'm here with the Begging Bowl again. And I'd just like to say, if you're listening and you're enjoying what I'm doing and what I'm trying to achieve with this podcast, the biggest way you can help and support is to share it out. Let other people see it on social media and... let's spread the word, eh? It's available on virtually every single platform now. Yes, even Apple, thank you. So please, you know, let's get the word out there. And now, having bored you to death with that for 30 seconds, it's back to Amrit and Mr. FX. Thanks a lot. And it's a family business, isn't it? Is your sister still involved? And your
brothers? Yeah, so my sister-in-law... So my brother used to take his missus out, and then she started picking it up, and she really enjoyed it. And she went out, from the most of last, I think, sort of near enough every single weekend from March to sort of October last year, she was out. She did a wicked job. She's taking a bit of a backseat from it now, which is a shame.
Okay.
My brother still helps out on the weekends. My dad does, even like sort of during the week when we need sort of things sorting out. And then I've got my little cousin on board as well, and it's great because they sort of share the same passion that I do.
Hmm.
So they make sure every single little thing is perfect.
And of course they're invested in making sure that stuff is looked after and taken care of, whereas an employee wouldn't necessarily be fine, just chuck it in there.
Precisely that, yeah. So we use quite a lot of freelancers as well on sort of the bigger shows, and we're lucky enough and fortunate that we've got a good base of freelancers who are really good friends, and they look after things like it's their own as well. But I have seen instances where other freelancers have been like, oh, you know, we don't really care, it's not our kit, let's just chuck it in. And that's why I'm quite lucky where I've got the family involved, and you know, they're turning up on time to gigs and treating everybody with respect and making sure the job is done and it's done properly.
Mm. Yeah, and it is. I think you're universally respected, I think, in the industry. So are you where you want to be within the industry? Have you got ambitions to take it bigger? Could you take it bigger?
In terms of, are we talking SFX industry or the wedding industry?
Well, the SFX industry, really, because like you say, you're not just tied to weddings, are you? You're doing, what's your percentage actually of weddings versus other stuff?
I would probably say at the minute 50-50.
Okay.
I reckon sort of 50% of our work is weddings, Asian and English, and 50% is sort of the other market.
Hold on, rewind. You're doing English weddings as well?
Oh, yeah.
So English clients are buying SFX? No, come on.
Yeah, so there's a group of venues that we do. there's two that are local and there's two that are further away up in Stoke. And I think we sort of did one event in there once and they sort of saw it and were like, hey, we love this, and can we sort of advertise you in our brochures when we give to couples? And I was like, yeah, of course. And then, like, obviously English weddings have never seen this before.
No.
So it's really, really popular. Sort of,
Sparklers?
The sparklers and the low fog. Mainly the sparklers,
yeah,
which they like quite a lot. We've been doing quite a lot of English weddings as well. And I love it because we literally turn up at, like, 6 p.m. ready for the turnaround. And we're out of there by, like, 8:15. And it's wicked. and the latest they run is by, like, 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Whereas with an Asian wedding, it's, like, at least an hour.
And white English guests always listen to the DJ and sit down when they're told and stand up when they're told. And
exactly.
Things generally run to time, which is refreshing. So are you ever tasked with sort of creating? Does a client come to you and say, look, you know, I've got $5,000 to spend, do what you want? Or do they come to you and they say, I really just like the sparklers, just give me more sparklers, more sparklers? how does that work?
It's a bit of both. So we've had like some sort of corporate awards and things like that where they'll say, hey, the budget is this much and we just want to make sure that we celebrate the awards and yeah. That's it. So I'm like, cool, so for that budget we can do a bit of this, a bit of this, a bit of this, and mix it up and do this effect for this award and then this one and then this one. So we do get clients that will say, yeah, here's our budget, this is what we want. With wedding clients, they'll say, hey, I've seen a video of this, can you do this? And then they see another video and say, hey, can we add this one? And they say, hey, I've seen that video as well, can we add this one? Like on Monday or Tuesday, I had a client phone me and say, hey, I saw that confetti that you did on your story. Can we add that to our wedding as well? And I was like, well, excellent. Yeah, sure. Some of them hear the price.
Ching, ching.
Like, yeah.
just ring that in there too. Pencil out. Have that one on.
And then with this sort of arena stuff, sort of artists and things like that, we just get like a rider. So the production company will send us a rider and say, hey, this is their rider, this is what they want. And then we just quote on it. If the promoter's got the budget, great. If not, they'll cut things back and say, right, we don't want this. They want at least to make sure that they have some CO2. So yeah, it's all different.
How much competition, like for those where the big theatre shows or whatever, how much competition have you got in that realm? I've got no idea how many companies there are doing effects.
There isn't many companies on that side of thing that just specialise in SFX. Now, there's no sort of, you've got like sort of really small companies that couldn't handle sort of an arena gig.
Hmm.
And then you've got the big ones who just charge way too much for the size of show it is. Like with a lot of the sort of smaller artists who can sell an arena, but not sort of sell out an arena, but they can sell tickets in an arena.
Sure.
They don't have the big budgets to spend on effects. So the sort of bigger companies aren't in the right price bracket for it.
Okay.
Whereas we've sort of found ourselves to be like one of few of the middle-sized SFX companies that can deal with the shows and be within their budget. Nothing too cheap, but obviously the bigger companies charge a higher premium because they can.
Yeah.
Because they don't really want to get involved in the smaller shows. So we're finding not getting much competition because you're either massive or you're small. And we're sort of finding ourselves in the middle. And there's only sort of like a few companies that are in the middle. But it's also sort of, we're still getting our name in that market now.
And if Mist FX was to carry on growing and you found yourself as one of the big boys, how would you be pricing at that point? Would you be pricing along their lines, or would you stick where you are, do you think?
It's a tough one. I probably would be pricing it more, because if you can price yourself at a higher price bracket, why not? It's same with cameramen. You've got like cameramen which charge quite a high premium, and then you've got cameramen which charge a medium premium. And I've heard like some of the differences between the two, and they charge a premium because they can, and people will book them regardless of that.
Yeah.
Because people want that specific person to film their wedding.
Yeah.
And it's the sort of same with that. Is like, if somebody wants you specifically to do the SFX, then you can say, well, if you want us to do it, this is what the price is going to be. Whereas at the minute, because obviously we are still going up against other people, it is like you don't want to price yourself out too much, where you're still trying to establish your name within that market.
Yeah. I would imagine your job is fun. Is it fun? I think it's fun.
It's fun.
It looks like fun.
It's fun when everything goes off and it works.
Hmm.
It's not the stress before it goes off isn't fun, because it's like you can do as many tests as you want, but you don't know until you're actually in that live moment whether it's going to work or not.
Is that why, because I remember you've said to me in the past, because I was teasing you about having wireless sparklers, and, yeah, so-and-so company has wireless, why haven't you got wireless? And you were sort of saying, because you can't trust it 100%. And
yeah, exactly. So like when we started off, like the sparklers, they were wireless, where they were powered by sort of normal wired power, but the signal was wireless, and we were finding that sometimes when you're trying to trigger them all, one might not turn on or one might not turn off, and you don't want that.
It looks unbalanced or whatever on camera.
Exactly. And with the first dance, you can't go back. You can't say to the couple, hey, we're going to do that again.
Nope.
So, well, to be fair, we've had it once where a couple have gone, we need to do that first dance again because it was the wrong first dance song.
Oh, it's the wrong song. DJ's so fault.
We packed everything up. We were waiting for the second half. And then during main course, the DJ comes over and says, hey, we're going to do the first dance again. I was like, you're pulling my leg. I was like, yeah. I was like, everything's packed up now. But no, I'm being serious. We've played the wrong song. We need to do it again. Wow. I was like, oh, okay. So that's the only time we've ever had a second chance.
Wow.
It wasn't our fault.
That's good.
But yeah, because you've only got that one time to do it, it's just so stressful. But when it all goes off, it's wicked and it's so satisfying.
Yeah. And I would imagine you've gained, same as myself, when I look around at all the friends that I've made in the industry. Oh, yeah. I mean, when it's great, isn't it? What we do 100%. Is just great.
There's not many jobs where you can wake up and look forward to working with the people you're going to work with.
True.
It's like when we know we're working with certain DJs or certain decor companies or certain cameramen as well, you're like, yeah, you know, I can't wait to see that person today. We're going to have a right laugh. And because we do, every time we see each other, we have a right old laugh and giggle and we get the job done. And there's not many jobs where you can do that, where you wake up and you're like, oh, we're going to have a good laugh today.
Yeah.
But get the job done as well.
Yeah. I think we're in a really privileged position, actually.
100%. And I think that's one of the things that I love about the wedding industry, and one of the reasons why I wouldn't want to solely rely on the big shows, because the weddings are the fun bit of the
job. Yeah. I suppose the other shows are just business.
Precisely that. Like, I think there was about 3 weeks in a row where I hadn't done a wedding and the other guys had been out doing weddings, and then after a bit, when I went to go and do a wedding, I was like, I've actually missed this of seeing everybody, seeing the familiar faces, catching up with everybody, having a right laugh and things like that. I really missed that. So that's one thing that I love about the weddings, which probably one of the reasons why I don't sort of get out of the wedding game.
So that's very interesting. Did you actually have any sort of goal in mind when you started doing this? Did you sort of have any vision that 10 years down the road you'd be doing X or Y, or is it just as it happens?
I think when I first started it off, it was just sort of like another thing to do. Not another thing to do, but it was just something that I found interesting.
Yeah.
And I didn't have any goals for it at the time. I just thought, the odd weekend I'll go out and do a gig or whatever. And like, I remember, like, I think one of the years, I can't remember when it was, maybe like 2017 or 2018, and I was writing all the dates down on a piece of paper that I had for the year. Mm. And I was like, hey, I was like, we've got like 24 gigs for the whole year. I was like, wow, that's sick. And then my brother was like, your target is to get to 50 for the year. And I was like, nah, I was like, no way. I was like, we're not going to do that. Like maybe 30.
Mm.
And I think we ended up doing something like, must have been like 70 or something like that. And wow. I was like, to me, that was mental. I was like, I never thought that would happen. And at the time, I was just storing the things at home. So I had like the one little fog machine and the guns and some gas bottles.
That's going to make your hallway interesting when you walk in front of them and you're tripping over those.
So they were just at home. And then I went to college one day and I came back and I was like, I was in the house and I was just normal. And then my mum was like,
get this stuff out of the house. Pretty much.
Well, she goes, have you not noticed anything? And I went, what? She was like, have a look around. I went to the other room. I was like, hey, where's my stuff gone? And then she was like, oh, we've got you a small storage unit. And I was like, what? And then she was like, yeah. And then that's, and that was some years back now.
Mm.
And that was how we sort of got this place.
That's nice though,
isn't
it?
And then like,
on one hand, it's nice because she was thinking about you. On the other hand, it's just like, get this crap out of my
And lounge. I'm like, crap, I've got to pay unit rent now. I'm like, damn it, I'm getting like, I've got expenses.
So she got you the unit, but she wasn't going to pay the rent for it.
Yeah, she was like, it's like we've done the first like 2 or 3 months. She goes, you can do the rest. I was like, oh, man, all right, I'll do that.
Yeah. Earlier on, you were saying you picked up a couple of clients when they'd seen the reel from last weekend's wedding.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, listeners, for keep referring back to this one wedding, but
it was just so good.
It was outstanding. So those clients, you posted a bit of video of off your phone just, or whatever?
Yeah, it was just what people had put on their stories and we'd reposted it. And obviously, like, a lot of people were like, hey, when you do it, we want to take a video.
Okay.
And so they've taken a video, they've put it on the story, and then we've just reposted it and put it up on our own things. And then two or three of our DJ clients saw it and were like, hey, we've got this gig next weekend. Can we add it to this one? How much is it going to be? And I had, like, a normal client was like, oh, I saw that on your Instagram. Can we add it to our wedding?
So this is how you're going to get most of your business then, because it's such a visual thing, isn't it? You, and you can do outstanding videos, and cameramen like myself can can help you for a small fee.
It's one of the, it's one of them where obviously, like, the cameraman will take a video or whatever, or we used to take videos of it, and obviously when we started, we'd put it up on Instagram and we'd promote it and we'd sponsor it, and people would see it and DM us and say, hey, you know, because back when obviously we started, we'd doing the low fog and the sparklers came out and the guns had come out, not many people had seen it. So it was like, they'd see it through Instagram and you'd use hashtags and things like that, and then they'd see it. But now most of the clients have seen it all already on weddings. They're like, they already know what they want. They're like, oh, hey, I've been to a wedding and I've seen the dry ice and the full sparklers.
Yeah.
Can we have a price on that? But so before, we used to do a lot of trade and retail, well, not retail, but direct customers. Mm. Now we mainly stick to sort of like 95% just trade clients, and the other 5% are where they've spoke to a trade client and they've just said, here's their number, just deal with it directly. Yeah. Just because we found that now we don't have enough time to be able to deal with direct clients. They want to see videos, they want to know about the product, but we just, but I just don't have enough time to juggle dealing with them and then doing the sort of day-to-day activities as well as.
Well, it just, again, it sounds like you need a secretary. Personal assistant, this is what you need.
A lot of people have said that, but for me, it's, I really enjoy doing every little thing. So dealing
every
with
aspect
the,
of
every
work.
Aspect. So like dealing with the clients, you know, when they WhatsApping or they're DMing or things like that. I like to speak to them myself, so they get that personal touch. I like dealing with that. Then coming to the unit, prepping equipment, cleaning equipment, testing the equipment, to then obviously going out to the gigs and then doing the sort of back office admin with that, doing the paperwork, sending out invoices and quotes. I like to do it all myself just because people then get that personal touch from us and they don't get that commercial feel.
Yeah. Doesn't leave you much for a personal life though, does it? Although I have seen you, you know, getting off on holiday here and there.
Yeah, you're right. It doesn't leave much for a personal life, but I think because I enjoy it so much, it doesn't bother me so much. There has been times where it has bothered me a lot and I'm like, I'm fed up with this. I've had enough. I'm selling up. There's been many times where
I've said
that. There's been many, many times where I've said, forget it, I'm just going to sell it all. That's it, Monday, this, everything's gone in eBay.
But what would you do if you did?
Genuinely, I don't know.
Yeah.
I always wanted to be a pilot. So I think I'd probably become a pilot.
Okay.
Yeah, I think
you can just do that. You just go and fly for easy jets, easy. No problem.
I think I'd try and get like my pilot's license or something. Because before I started this, when I was in high school, I did really want to become a pilot, but I think it was just the amount of money it cost to do it. It just put me off massively. And I was
it's
very expensive. So, yeah.
This is one of those recurring questions that comes up for everybody, but when was the moment that you thought to yourself at the end of a job, a wedding or a stadium or whatever, where you sort of thought to yourself, that's it, we've arrived, this is the big time now?
As in, what, when we first started doing the big gigs or
whenever? When was the one time where you sort of got in the van at the end of the night and just felt absolute pride for what you'd done and felt that this, you know, you were now legitimately proper?
That would have been last year in March when we did the AP Dylan tour.
Okay.
That for me was probably my biggest show to date, maybe. Not in terms of, I think, in, yeah, because obviously it was a tour and I'd probably say that's probably one of my biggest ones to date so far, with the amount of equipment that we put on it and for the amount of days it was. I'd probably say that it's potentially up there with one of the biggest ones we've done. And I think that was it, because it was such a big gig and it was such a big Indian artist, and everything went so smoothly and so well, and everybody was happy with it. So I think that for me, after those sort of 6 dates that we did it, I think from then I was like, okay, this is like, this has now finally put us on
the map.
The map, yeah. So I reckon it'd probably be that gig. And it's one that I've sort of always looked back on, and sort of I've got like the professional pictures printed out and put up on the wall and things like that in the office at home. So I think, yeah, that was definitely the gig that I'm probably most proudest of. And afterwards I was like, yeah, you know what, this is something now. Yeah, this is something now.
We sort of touched on it there, but your work-life balance isn't a work-life balance, is it a work-work balance?
It's a, like, it depends on the season. Like, you know, like, this sort of summertime from sort of March to end of October is where we're sort of pretty much busy. Yeah, flat out. From November, December, Jan and Feb, it's sort of, like, Jan is completely usually quiet. We don't really do much in Jan, and I'm quite glad of that. December, we do quite a lot of Christmas parties, but sort of November time, things like that, is where things sort of quieten down and you sort of start to wind down a little bit.
Do you use that time to service equipment and, you know, make sure everything's tip-top, or are you constantly at that anyway?
We're constantly at that anyway. I think those are times where we sort of look at, like, right, what needs to be sold on, what needs to be moved on.
Okay.
What needs to be changed, what sort of cases are looking a bit battered now, what needs to... That's when we sort of do, like, a turnaround. But in terms of sort of servicing kit, like, sort of every time before the sparks go out, they get sort of blown out and tested. And then every sort of 2-3 weeks, we sort of open it up, blow out the insides and give it a quick deep clean.
So have you ever sat and watched a video and thought, oh, that's a new effects that I've not seen before and we ought to get into that?
Yeah, so I've seen videos and stuff like that before from sort of the big festivals and concerts where I've seen it and I'm like, oh, wow, that looks phenomenal. And, like, we've had it where people have sent us videos and they've said, hey, can you do this? And I'm like, you know what, I haven't seen this before. And I've sent it to a few of my mates and they're like, oh, yeah, this is such and such and this is who supplies it and that's the product, basically.
Yeah.
So there has been times where people have sent us videos and we've sort of, that's when we've sort of found out about a product, or we've sort of seen a video of, like, I don't know, like a massive SFX company doing a job at Download or Glastonbury and things like that. And I'm like, oh, you know what? I haven't seen that before. That looks wicked, that would. But then it's just having the jobs there to apply that to.
Oh, okay. So.
But in terms of inspires me, there is, like, a really good, like, two good friends of mine who were in partnership. One of which helped me start off, which was Andy. And I used to sort of see him sort of every week last year to get extra kit off him and things like that. And I recently did a tour for him. They inspired me quite a lot. I would sort of go there and I'd look at their unit and be like, wow, like, this is, like, impressive. And, like, the way they would do things and the way they would do things, I'd apply it to the way we do things and things like that. So, yeah, I think they sort of really inspired me to sort of keep going and just sort of, yeah, just something to look up to.
Yeah.
It's definitely something to look up to. And it's nice to have that inspiration there.
Yeah. Any unfulfilled, I mean, I suppose you want to do Glastonbury, do you?
I think I'd love to do Glastonbury. We've done, like, quite a few of the festivals recently, and they've been really good. I don't know if I've got anything on my bucket list.
No?
I think I had the O2 Arena on my bucket list, and we're doing that in August, which is going to be really good.
Who's that for?
It's for an Afro beats artist called Ashake. We did his last set of shows back in December when he did a tour, but that was unfortunately the day that the incident happened at Brixton.
So
we were down that day. So that's going to be a really good show at O2. I think I would love to do, like, a Glastonbury or something like that. I've done Leeds Reading before, Yeah, I think I'd like to do Glastonbury just to say, yeah, I've done Glastonbury.
It does give you a sort of privileged access as well to all areas, doesn't it? To which, speaking yeah. as a former roadie, I know is very good to have.
Yeah, so like when we did, when I did Leeds Reading with a good friend of mine, they were providing for the artist. So we were allowed into sort of artist village, and obviously we had all like the good catering and things yeah. like that. And
makes a difference.
Oh, it was wicked.
Clean
yeah.
toilets.
We had, yeah, and we had, I think, steak for lunch and things like that. And
very nice.
Like burgers for snacks after like 9, 10 o'clock. It was wicked.
Yeah, brilliant. So I think we're at the point where I ask the final question. Do you know what the final question is?
No.
See, this is when I discover
who's
listened to the podcast and who hasn't.
It's been some time since I've watched it.
So my final question is, if I could furnish you with the knowledge and the tools and the wherewithal to do any other job within the wedding industry, what would you do?
Oh, definitely not decor. It's just too messy.
You don't want to arrange cushions for a living?
it's not that. It's just the amount of mess there is and the amount of crap you have to deal with. Like, you've got to make sure you've got all these sort of candle holders. Then you've got to make sure you've got the candles for them. Then you've got to make sure you've got the water for them. Then you've got to make sure you've got a lighter to light the candles with.
And somebody to operate the lighter to light the candles that are in the water that are on the table.
So definitely not a decor. Like, hats off to the decor industry. The guys that do decor, they put in a right shift, so fair play to them. DJing, I don't think I'd do DJing. I think catering. But as a like how Atul does it, where he's sort of at the top of the chain and he directs how things go. Just because I like food so much. as you can tell.
Don't we all, yeah.
So I think that's probably the other one, because I see it with like a lot of catering companies where, I'm not going to name names, but like where they'll have like a big budget client and they'll still do the same old food. And I'm like,
yeah.
Hey, come on, man. Like, you're at the Dorchester now, you're at the Savoy. Do something different.
Yeah.
Don't do the same old thing you do every single week. A good example of that is Bunty from Prestige. When he has sort of different clients coming in who want different things, he'll create a whole different new dish out of nowhere. And you're like, and you taste it and you're like, this shouldn't work, but this works. And it goes on a treat at a wedding. So I think I'd like to do that.
Brilliant.
How about yourself?
Any other job? Photographer, because you can just rock up with one bag. You just rock up with one bag and go, hi, guys. Wear a sexy hat, Gervia. put a pair of sunglasses on, look cool, strut around the place a bit.
Yeah, shoot some photos and go home.
Shoot some photos and go home.
No heavy lifting.
Easy job.
And steal people's sockets.
Pardon?
Steal people's sockets to charge things.
Do they?
Have you got a socket? Yeah,
so I don't know, because I'm fully...
oh, yeah, you're fully equipped.
I'm fully DC, AC/DC. So listen, Amrit, thank you very, very much for wasting your time with me for an hour or two. Thank you for the pizza. Thank you for the Coke that I can't drink because you didn't get zero.
Oh, sorry.
Goodness
Nick,
sake.
I'll do better next time.
You will. thank you for listening, everybody, and we'll see you on the next episode of the Wedding Professionals Podcast. Bye, y'all. Say bye-bye.
Wicked. Bye, guys.
So, there we go. Really nice conversation with Amrit. Really enjoyed going down to Dudley and recording that one. So I hope you enjoyed the conversation too. If you did, you know what I'm going to say? Please share the podcast. Get on socials and share it out there, and let's get the word out and about. That's it for this one. Thanks for listening. Thanks for sticking with it. Appreciate your support. Appreciate your help. Thank you very, very much. And I will see you on the next episode of the Wedding Professionals Podcast. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.